Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
I don't know. This is like, I can't remember the dance programs they had back when I was a kid on TV, but it looks like for a minute like we were going into one of them.
Dave Clark. Bandspan.
Yeah,
dance. See, you get us off to a good start and you're bound to hear anything. Anyway, in case you didn't hear, today is Friday, November 20th, 2015, and we were just checking to see that you were all there, and I hope you enjoyed the music, and good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
We're here today. We do have a guest today, Rob West. He'll be joining us after the first break of the day for the two segments. So we're going to talk a little bit about bonds. We're going to talk a little bit about the IMF and placing China into the
SDRs.
The SDRs. Christine Lagarde at one point said, oh, maybe we should wait until next year. And now all of a sudden she's anxious and she is supporting that they be included sooner than later. So with that, let's get to the prices for gold and silver today. We have gold today, a little bit of pressure after the nice run up yesterday, down $4.90 at $1,077.90. Silver's down 13, $14.26. Platinum is down 2 at $857. Palladium was up big, almost 4% today, up 20 at $565. The US DX today was stronger, 0.61 at 99.60. Crude oil. Let me get an update on that. I'm not sure. I'm looking at a I don't know if I'm looking at a close on oil. The price is 39.15 to the downside. And we'll be also be talking a little bit about that with Rob West. I think he has a report on the amount of oil that is just, you know, just being held in cargo ships.
Off Galveston.
Yeah.
They could sink them all and just let it flood the Gulf of Mexico like they did with the when they had the blowout on the well. Because the Gulf and the animals there, they're used to a little extra oil, and they could...
Well, they get that nice bath afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so We'll be talking about that later on in the program. Let's go to the markets, and hey, it doesn't really matter what goes on and around the world. You know, it's all about the stock markets. The Dow is off its highs of the day, but it was up 91 points today at 17,823. The NASDAQ up 31 at 5104. The S&P up 7 at 2089. 10-year yield still holding 2.26. Pressure on the euro, as we would see with the dollar, down 7.9, 106. And I did have something we were going to talk about, parity on the euro and the U.S. dollar. We'll hold that for Monday's program. But I do believe it's a very good possibility we will see that parity, and it'll be interesting to see what does it. You know, what unfolds, what happens when the euro and the dollar meets parity? Is this a way, are they doing this intentionally? Is it a way that, you know, perhaps, you know, maybe to offset adding the China's currency into the IMF? There's a lot of things that are going on, and we'll talk about that later. But the euro pressure down 7.9 at 106. We have Europe, Germany was up just fractionally, London basically no change, the big move with Hong Kong, and that was only a little over 1%. You know, it used to be a move of 1% was a fairly nice move. it was a big deal. And but now with the numbers and the you know, what they see in the markets today, it's just a fractional move anymore, 1%. So, let's see. Anything else, Sal? Let's see.
Well, one of the things that interests me is gold is down below $40 a barrel. And I'm looking at that at the same time that the U.S. dollar index is almost up to 100. Almost up to the numbers don't actually mean anything remarkable. If the U.S. dollar index goes up to 100 and exceeds it, is it a psychologically significant point, or is it just another number on the scale? It's probably just another number on the scale, but still you look at it and you say, dollars may be going up over 100, not today, but maybe next week sometime. Crude oil, how far does crude oil have to go down before the dollar goes to 100? I'm curious, do we need $38 per barrel crude oil? Is there any correlation between the crude oil and the U.S. dollar index? I know there's some vague correlation. I won't argue that there's a significant, but just crossed my mind. It's like reading tea leaves, look in the cup, and I see all the tea leaves packed up over on one side of the cup, and I wonder if that means something or somebody's just been shaking the cup.
Well, certainly. I mean, if you're looking at the petrodollar, it would definitely have an impact on our currency and so forth. But, you know, it has a lot of you know, multinational corporations. They don't want a stronger dollar. It hurts their bottom line.
American corporations don't want it. That's true.
The American multinational corporations, yeah. They don't like a stronger dollar. It also hurts our exports. However, it makes products coming into this country cheaper. And Where does the U.S. get most of its products that people out there buy? And, you know, from outside of the country. So, you know, people get to look at this and see, you know, prices that are lower. Is it an indication of deflation? No, it's a matter of the markets being rigged. And so it was a matter of us exporting our inflation. So, but everything will be, you know, I believe everything will come back to haunt all these, you know, with all these manipulations. Day of reckoning is coming, and we will see prices and everything else adjust. Reality is reality. We know what happens when markets are rigged. We know what happens when you look at how upside down the world is. The violence in this world anymore. It surprises me that gold is having as difficult time as it is. Now, I'm not suggesting that it should be 8,000 today. However, it does surprise me that they have been able to suppress these prices to the level that they have. But it also means one day you're going to wake up and you're going to see gold skyrocketing. You won't have a chance. Product will disappear so quickly it'll make your head swim. And I'm just not saying that to, in order to create some sales. That is what's going to happen. And for those of you who wait, when you're ready to buy it, right now you think your funds are, you know, bringing in your dividends with the stock market. And, you know, you've seen things reverse themselves. You've seen the stock market go to 6,000 to 8,000. You see it pull back 2,000 and we're back up, you know, close to 18,000 again. And I get it. You know, there aren't, you know, you can't put your money in the banks anymore. Who would with the way the system is handled? There's no interest that's being paid, and soon you'll be paying the banks to hold your money. So what do you do with it? So are you taking advantage of the paper investments at this point? But that's going to change. That, and it will all change so very quickly. You won't have time to sell your paper. You won't have time to liquidate, and you won't have time to buy gold, because things will happen that quick.
We do have time for Rob West, however, who is senior financial strategist for RME Advisors, Financial Preservation Network. And Rob will give us some more contact information in a couple of minutes. Hello, Rob. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Al. Hello, Melody.
Hi, Rob. We weren't supposed to bring you on till the second break, but I'm glad to have you here. So I hope you were ready.
Well, I'll just be standing by, and I got some supporting information. I think you're right, Melody, about the sudden surgence of gold and silver prices, and we all know what the physical supply is. So, you know, it's just a good idea to have any portfolio at least hedged with a decent amount of gold and silver, but things can and will change so rapidly. I think I was mentioning to you earlier, you know, for 25 years as a stockbroker and going through the crash of 87 and all that, things change just so quickly. And this could be one of them. It was a very quick change in not only the price of gold and silver, but I think the last time we really had a situation like this, so many of the dealers see the supply and demand, and you'll pay a gouging price for it that particular week or that particular day, won't you, Melody?
Absolutely. And I mean, and they don't wait around. Number one, you see wholesalers, the suppliers, you know, they increase their premiums because they know how quick it disappears. And then you also have like my competitors who will also then increase their premiums. And we always try to keep our markups as close to what we've always charged, you know, but we can see that happen, because when it comes down to it, I can't even imagine what some of these premiums will do. You know, we still have another 5 minutes. Mint State 65, $20 Liberties in 87 and 89. I mean, they're selling at $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 in 87 to 89. They were $15,000 coins. And that happens. It's huge gains. And 87, 89, it's nothing compared to what we'll see today.
Yeah. And, you know, you only have so much inventory, and then you have to rely on a large wholesaler. And so the markups you have to pay to get the product is not a markup of yours to keep.
Right.
And it's not a markup that Melody will be able to control. She's going to have to take whatever markup is there from wholesalers, and I'll be surprised if we see many wholesalers who are determined to keep their markups the same as they've been in the past. This thing is, you know, when this thing catches fire, you're going to find prices are going to go up, and people will be trying to make as much profit as possible. It's human nature. It's the way the world is, right or wrong. And the point is, that won't be a good time to be trying to buy. It'll get you talking to yourself. It might be a great time just because the price is going to go so high that you're going to have to get in, but you're going to watch, you're going to be wondering, is this time to buy? Should I wait a little bit until it cools off a little? And I'm speaking in terms of when things break and price of gold begins to rise. It's going to be difficult, challenging to buy. You'll be able to do it. Prices will go up dramatically, and even if it's difficult to buy at that time, it may still be sensible and rational and important to do that, but it would be easier to do it now when prices are low. You know, it's something you talk about from time to time. It's everybody gets it. The way you make money in the market is you buy low and you sell high. The problem is that when you buy really low, everybody is trying to get rid of something. And you have to go against the herd mentality. Herd says, that's worthless. Don't buy that. That's the time to buy. When it goes up to the other end and everyone is saying, yes, yes, I want to buy more. I want to buy more. That's the time to sell. And it's, we are all subject to that. What's the neighbor doing? What's everybody else doing? And we want to do what everyone else is doing. We want to behave, you know, a member of the herd, certain amount of herd phenomena there. And it's completely contrary to making a profit. You really have to be a contrarian in order to make a significant profit, or that's the way it appears to me after 25 years or whatever it was working in the stock market. What do you think about contrarians, Rob?
Well, maybe after the break we'll have a little time to discuss just the markets in general, the difference between the stock market, the bond market, the commodities market, the gold and silver market, and how they operate, because sometimes just having that knowledge is, no pun intended, but worth its weight in gold, mm-hmm. because of the current conditions and knowing how the pricing goes in and out of the marketplace, I think is really important. And but, you know, I've seen total 44 years in the financial marketplace, and I've just seen an awful lot of things go across my desk, and what we're looking at now, I think, is so unusual that most people alive have not seen what I expect to be coming down the pipeline here very shortly, and it could be a few weeks, it could be a few months, two or three things that could be a catalyst for having some major change occur, and but I think maybe you'll have a little discussion that people have more knowledge and information, and I encourage them, yeah, if they don't know a lot about the markets for gold and silver, just to chat with Melody about them in general, and if they're already owners of gold and silver, review the portfolio with Melody and see if you're in the right place with what you really would like it to do given a certain event, because there's been a number of folks I've counseled in estate planning. They've inherited nice positions of metals, and you know, it does a great job, but it's going to do specifically what they may want it to do because they're not their grandfather. You know, they just have a different set of circumstances. So, and
they haven't lived through a depression yet, and perhaps watched their understanding increase significantly. They're still working in an environment where they may hope certain things that are maybe not reasonable expectations. But we'll talk more about the difference between the markets when we return on Financial Survival in just a moment. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom, and our guest is Rob West, Senior Financial Strategist for RME Advisors. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Ancient Greeks thought thyme herb provided strength. Indeed, the chemical compounds of thyme contain antioxidants, an effective germicide that kills whooping cough bacteria and makes breathing easier. Just imagine what you can do with thyme herb when it comes to respiratory ailments like croup, pneumonia, asthma, and sinusitis. The extra benefit of thyme herb is that it soothes the nerves and stops spasmodic coughing, so you can get some rest. Who says you don't have time to take care of yourself? Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free for Thyme Tincture NT to soothe your cough and get some rest. 866 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International 704-875-8010 or online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Our guest is Rob West, Senior Financial Strategist for RME Advisors. And Rob, when we broke, just before we broke for the commercials, you said that you were going to give us some insight into the difference between the various markets. A lot of people, including myself, would suppose that we're just dealing with supply and demand, and those forces should fundamentally be the same in each market, and what you're telling us is the markets move in mysterious ways, or at least you're implying that. They each have characteristics that aren't that simple, and more complex. The market comparisons are more complex than we might suppose. Is that true?
Yeah, one of the important things, Al and Melody, is that the voices in the financial sales marketplace will always promote positives because that's just the nature of the business. So, you know, unhappy and cautious investors will clam up, and they're just uncomfortable to take the risk. So most of the news and information you hear, it's interesting to see why you hear it. Now, about our company, I encourage you to check, listen to what I'm going to say carefully here, because I'm not any longer in financial sales. I don't sell commodities. We promote financial education, and that's because I'm at a point in my career path that I can afford to do it. And I'm working on a book, which is, I think, will be a moneymaker. But what I'm going to tell you is the sum composite of 44 years of things that I've learned over the markets or over the long stretch of the marketplace. The stock market on the NASDAQ or the New York Stock Exchange or the American, it operates as an auction. And there's an instant market because the market makers are there to make a market, which means they're either going to buy or they're going to sell. And it's pretty much instantaneous. And over the last few years, a lot of it's become a lot more electronic, but still that market maker has to be present. Like during the crash of 87, a lot of stocks completely closed up. The market did for a period of time totally because the market maker has a personal risk to buy or sell. And when you get so many sellers and no buyers, he doesn't have a market, and he has the right to close it because he has his personal money at stake. So the stocks are unlike the bond market, and particularly in municipal bonds, there has to be a buyer before a transaction will occur because there's no market maker standing in between as a rule. So if I have a load of municipals or corporate bonds that I want to sell, I'll go through a transaction coordinator, but they need to find a buyer on the other end before. And sometimes it could be weeks before somebody wants to buy your bond. Well, the problem can set in is particularly in the corporate marketplace, most of the bonds are owned by mutual funds. And the rules there, the mutual fund, if I redeem my shares, the fund manager has 7 days that he needs to make good my money. So he doesn't have 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks to find a buyer at a good price. He needs to sell now. So a run on the market, a market crash in the bond market can occur a little more dramatically because if the mutual funds are selling, they have to sell those bonds. But if you're a real sharp investor and you look at the individual issues, you can make significant money by a bond that should be selling at 80, which means 80% of its face value. If it gets pushed way down and starts selling at 30, but it's really worth 70 or so because the company issuing the bond is a good company, well, if you pick it up at 30 and can wait out 6 months or a year or so, the bondholders have super rights against the assets of the company, unlike stockholders. So you have a lot more protection for your investment as a bondholder. But if you're able to pick it up super cheap at 30 and then in 6 months or a year turn around and sell it at 70 or 80, you make a capital gain on that just like you would with a stock. And during the holding period, you earn the interest that the bondholder has to pay. So the difference between the markets of stocks and bonds are very significant. And particularly now, I was telling Melody earlier today, emerging market corporate bond debt, there's potentially $18 trillion in bad bonds there. There's over $2 trillion in U.S. corporate junk bonds. There's over $1 trillion in student loans, and Melody had a good observation about the student loans going into default. And auto loans, there's a lot of subprime auto loans. I was telling Melody, I just saw a commercial here in Denver for, I think it was a Dodge vehicle, up to 84 months financing at no interest. Well,
84 months.
Yeah. And then I also read, up to that period of time, some of the vehicles are up to 10 years old. Now, you just can't run an economy knowing these numbers and what they really mean. So, to give you an idea, there was only like $1 trillion in debt in 2008. Now we're over 20. And
yeah.
So, you know, I'm not trying to paint
7 years. 7 years we've increased the debt, what, 20 times?
Yeah. Yeah, and just knowing these things about the markets, and historically, when the bond market tips, because it's 100% larger than the stock market capitalization, always what's happened in the past, when the bond market starts to hit the tank, very soon afterwards, the NASDAQ market does the same, and that begins the fear, the selling, and all the things we've seen, you know, in prior crash periods. So, and during the initial phases of that, I wouldn't be surprised if we wouldn't see the soaring of the stock and gold and silver markets, because people will look at that as a safe haven, and but the supply there is pretty small, and that's what we were just talking about earlier with Melody's information, knowledge, contacts with dealers. Everything will just get marked up big time.
And the point, because the market is relatively small, we're going to see significant changes in prices. If the market were larger, the price change wouldn't be as great. There's more momentum in the market, essentially, and would prevent it. But with a relatively small market, we're going to see things jump, take off like skyrockets and so on, or at least we can suppose that's going to happen. Is that true?
I wouldn't be surprised. And, I no longer give professional advice as an investment advisor or a CFP, but my portfolio, I would suggest, is significantly different than most of the listeners right now. And I can't detail it or anything, but, you know.
Are you telling us that you have an unusual percentage of your portfolio is in precious metals?
Relative to most people's thinking, that would be true.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Except for Eric Sprott or somebody like that.
Hey, Rob, I want to ask you, in this bond market, like the $2 trillion in corporate junk, I mean, how many more trillions can these markets hold? I mean, yeah. How big can this grow? I mean, they've been predicting the bubble breaking in the bond market. I mean, you had the two guys, I can't recall their names, that had the biggest bond bill. I know you know who I mean. But he's been predicting the bond market would be crashing 45 years ago. And yet look at these numbers.
Yeah, you're talking about the manager of PIMCO who resigned?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. But see,
what, gross?
Logical guys.
Yeah. Ow, your memory.
Mm-hmm. There it goes, yeah. Most people with a significant period of time of 20 years or more in the marketplace know that these you just can't keep passing these bubbles around for a long period of time, and no one expected this really to pull out of 2008, and that was only because of quantitative easing, and where so much money was created, and that went into the banking system to buy bad debt, bad bonds. It's just been a surprise for a handful of real old salts in the business to see why we're still up. And everybody's been saying it's going to go wrong. It never has. And pretty soon what will happen is, well, wolf, wolf, wolf. Everybody's crying wolf. There's no wolf. Oh, yeah, there's a whole pack of them out there. And when they come in, you know, of the $2.2 trillion in corporate junk, $500 billion or more of it is in been loaned out to fracking companies. And so you've seen the price of oil and gasoline, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And these fracking guys need what, $40 to $60 a barrel to be reasonable in business. And that these prices right now are not going to, it's not friendly to them at all. Yeah. So you start laying
and
off.
When you say sectors. These prices we have right now, the problem isn't simply whether or not they can make a profit off pumping oil at $40 a barrel. The problem is not just about the production costs. The problem is about how much money has been borrowed and what do they owe on the debt. And the debt was based on price of crude, in many instances, on a price of crude oil that was in excess of $100 a barrel.
That's right.
From my perspective, that's the big danger. Yeah, they can still pump crude oil, but they can't pay the debt. There's the problem. And
exactly.
That means there's going to be, bonds are going to be vaporized. People who think they've got money because they're holding a piece of paper are going to find out they have nothing. The consequences, it's one of those events that could go viral. It could have, you know, like a chain reaction from nuclear chain reaction where we could see some very serious consequences flow out of this. Maybe we will, maybe we won't. What are the probabilities that the low prices in the oil business are going to have such a dramatic effect on the oil companies that are involved in fracking that they will adversely affect the entire American economy? There's going to be an adverse effect, but will it be confined to the fracking companies, oil companies? they're the ones that are going to have the problem, and it'll be and the contagion will stop there, or will this bleed over into the bigger economy and the other markets?
We need a really big Band-Aid for this one, because just with the fracking companies and their huge amounts of borrowing, like you say, to pay their debt service is not even I don't think that's even going to be a possibility. So that'll lead to shutdown of operations, loss of jobs. But it's a ripple effect as well. I have a very good connection here in up in the Rockies. There's a very large mine that mines molybdenum, and moly is what they call it.
Mm-hmm.
And they were running 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. And the price of moly now has dropped. It's used in so many things, including light bulbs and things you wouldn't even think of. Well, the demand's drying up, and I think it's around $5 to $7 a ton right now. And they can't operate, and they're talking about closing the mine in January. Now, that's something you don't read in the news. Well, I know how many people work there. And I know the mortgage payments that they have. And so this, the whole thing, when you have this economic slowdown, if you can weave through the different industries that can have the effects on, well, the subprime car loans, because I'll tell you, all those guys out here, they love to drive the big trucks, you know, that are all jacked up and everything. Well, if they're giving them away for no interest in up to 84 months to pay it, then they're living large. But when they don't have a job, well, wait till they find out that their pension funds have already invested in some of these things, and they may not have that either.
Yeah.
So it's just it's a complicated picture.
And not just complex, but very vulnerable. Complex to the point of fragile. And, you know, house of cards are a bunch of analogies you can use, but they all point to better be very careful. This is like one of those cartoons with Bugs Bunny and Yosemite Sam, where Yosemite Sam strikes a match and he's in a darkened room full of gunpowder. And all of a sudden, you better tiptoe, because this thing just might go kaboom if you're not careful. And that's where we are right now. We're in a situation analogous to Yosemite Sam, and it isn't really funny. Yosemite Sam and Bugs Bunny, funny. What's going on right now, dangerous. Let's take a break for our next set of commercials, and Melody and I will be back on Financial Survival with our guest, Rob West. Please stay tuned.
Financial obligations or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos.
Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival with our guest, Rob West, Senior Financial Strategist for RME Advisors. Melody, you had a question you wanted to ask. Is that right?
Yes, Rob. We know that these corporations borrow money because of low rates. They repurchase back their shares to keep their prices from falling. Do we see the same thing in the bond market?
Typically no, but I understand a bond is a contract for a duration of price mm-hmm. for a given amount of interest, and sometimes they're convertible bonds into the to be converted into the stock of the company. So there's a little bit different animal than buying back your common stock that I think has been falsely keeping the market up over 17,000 with that type of borrow money for nothing and going back in and buying your own stock. But at the end of the day, by and large, if you have a company or a municipality with a large bond portfolio, when possible, some of the bonds have what they call provisions. So they might guarantee you've got to have a 20-year bond with a 5-year call provision. So if you buy it as a new option, within the first 5 years, they have to stick to letting you have the bond at that interest rate. But when the call option period comes up, they could refi at a lower rate and pay you off, and therefore there's less interest expense to the company. So I think there could be, it's a good question, and there could be combinations of multiple call options. And if the companies are in decent shape, because like you mentioned, they look like they're in great shape because their stock is up, and it's been because they've also been borrowing money to buy their own stock back, they may get some bond money in at a lower rate to pay off some higher interest cost bonds. But sometimes it's like the tail wagging the dog here, because if I would exercise a 5-year call option on my company and refi, well, I don't remember, Al, what you were talking about, how I think between 2012 and 2014 the amount of borrowing that went on was just out of this world. And so in the long run, is it really smart to continue to increase debt for a short-term benefit of having a lower interest cost? And keep in mind, in the financial marketplace, the underwriters make money because they're redoing your bonds, and they're making money because they're doing a new stock offering. And, the IPOs have been falling off, which is the introduction of newer stocks into the marketplace. So the more I got into it over the 25-year period I was doing it with the Wall Street guys, so many things changed, including the character of the people that I formerly had trust in that worked at the high Wall Street positions. So I think we're dealing with a different mentality of people. And they'll do anything to continue their their profitability to – quote unquote, earn their bonuses. And it's just pretty crazy stuff, particularly in the banking side of things, in the commercial banking. So
Here's the question, though. If you're telling us that the quality of ethics on Wall Street, the magnitude of ethics, perhaps, but the quality of ethics has diminished significantly, and you can't trust people. Now, that implies that you can say, okay, we've got a deal at a certain price, and then you find out that the guy you said that he agreed to the deal, he changes his mind, he backs out of the deal, and denies that there was a deal. Is that the sort of thing you're talking about with this change in ethics?
No, not necessarily that, Al, but let's look at it this way. We haven't talked much about derivatives, which is a very interesting set of rules for money. But when derivatives came out, it was selling insurance for various purposes. And a brief example, Melody owns a company that wants to sell overseas, but she's worried about the currency exchange for the profitability back here at home. And so, Al, you could sell her a derivative guarantee contract to absorb some risk should it go against her, and then you became her private insurer. And you may not know much about what you're doing or care too much about. You only have $50 billion to back her up, but you'll back up her company, and you'll back up my company, and you'll back up the producer's company. And if you go way over your limit because you're basically an unregulated insurance company, you don't care because you know you're not going to be able to pay it anyway if everybody goes in default at the same time. But what you're interested in is bringing in their cash, the premium for that derivative, and you got short-term thinking because you got Christmas coming up and a boat to pay for, you know? And there wasn't even derivatives way back when I first started. So I think a lot more of that is very underlying. And I know there's so much money that's being tossed through Wall Street that the SEC has disincentives to investigate things. The Commodities Futures Board, they have disincentives, you know. And that's why I think Melody was saying a little earlier about the price of gold being so low and all that. It's part of the manipulation process. And so at the end of the day, when the foundation really shifts on this skyscraper, you can bet that those folks are pretty well entrenched with gold and silver because they know that's where the asset monetary exchange starts again after they've blown it up, and it starts with trust, and it's always started with gold and silver.
When you say that we have had a lack of you at least imply that there's been a reduction in ethical behavior on Wall Street, do you think that reduction in ethical behavior in selling things like derivatives, even when you know they can't possibly work? That's one of the things you're implying. They're selling these derivatives like they're selling 100 derivatives, and they've only got enough money to back one derivative in the event of a failure, and I'm just pulling the numbers out of thin air, but that's unethical. Is this lack of ethics primarily a function of greed, or is it primarily a function of desperation, meaning that this system isn't going to hold together unless they can throw masses of money and unethical promises and whatever to hold this thing together and make it look good? Do you understand what I'm saying with that question? Not just greed, but primarily desperation? Is that a reasonable question, and do you agree with the implications?
Well, it's been my experience with the New York side of things in particular that most of the middle management have such performance pressures put on them, and their promotions and bonuses and things are based on that. I think that's one factor. Plus, we're now in 2015, and when I started back in the early 70s, we had a whole different set of mentality for a lot of business. And Wall Street set up to manufacture securities with a good story to bring your money in, because they're going to make money on both sides of the trade, whether they're buying or selling. And it got particularly ugly in the limited partnership business back in the early 90s. And I don't know what it's like now, but particularly the limited partnership, it's totally at the discretion of who the general partners are and what they know about what really what they're doing. And then we had wholesalers come around to our offices, and we had one or two lunches a day bought for the sales force because of the meetings that we would have based on their product and their product. And I'll tell you something else. No more than a few office managers. One of the offices I worked in had over 40 brokers. The manager's computer on his desk monitors every broker's activity, and he can see when they're building positions on different stocks particularly. And when a wholesaler would come in to promote their product, the manager knows how much is in the portfolio of everybody in the office. And he would come up with ways that would be a great idea to take a profit in DP&L and go into this energy partnership, limited partnership. But he knew how many positions in DP&L was in his entire office. And the brokers had no idea that was happening, and I didn't either for a number of years, but because the manager's on an incentive too. So if he sees his boys have all these things lined up, he'll create a new product, and here's why we should take profits on this and buy into this. And most of the brokers, you know, none of the brokers, nothing against the industry, but some of the better ones are used car salesmen. And they were fortunate to pass the Series 7 test to be a broker. Yep. I'm sure Melody sees this in her business too.
Absolutely, know. Particularly after 07. I mean, they've just swarmed to the gold market.
Well, then I'm still curious as to what you think was the cause, if you think you can even identify a cause. You're saying there's been a loss of ethics. It has something to do with increased competition. The competition is not merely between corporations and different brokerages. It's between the brokers within the brokerage house and even the manager of the brokers. They are all working against each other and under an extraordinary stress. Do you think that stress is a function of the computers? Did they heighten the level of competition to where it's become brutal and maybe even unsustainable?
Well, it would be hard for me to determine that in a nutshell, but you know, back in the times when I was there, and I things have changed a little bit because of the internet and just the different way things are being managed. But in that scenario I just gave you, I've known that where that would happen time and again. Everybody comes out looking good, because if you're a broker and you go over $20,000 a month in commissions, then particularly if you put it into this one new product that might be a limited partnership, they'd send a limo to take you out to a lot of places with any kind of escorts that you want, if you know what I mean.
Yep.
You know, and so you're living large, and they would do that so much to encourage it, and then you know, what they call it when they embellish somebody, there's a word for building them up. Then you might start thinking that, and then they'll expect it the next month and the next month, and then say, you know what, you really need that $500,000 house over there. My realtor friend's got a deal on it, and they want you to be in debt because you have to produce.
Yeah.
And these are things that the average listener just wouldn't have an idea about. You know?
It sounds like the brokers are caught in a situation where at least some of them are bamboozled by their own hype. The same story that they're using to perhaps deceive their customers, well, maybe with a few embellishments, but it's the same story, is being used to deceive them into investing whatever profits they made from their bonuses. They're being drawn into doing something that may be contrary to their interests. And it's kind of a cannibalistic system is what it sounds like.
Well, you know, it's just all based on gross production. One of the firms, if you were the top in the whole office for like 3 months in a row, you got the corner office with the windows, the leather chair, and the lamp. And if you don't maintain that, yeah. And if you don't maintain, did I have one of those offices? Yeah, I did. But if you don't maintain that and someone overtakes you, then you have to move to another office and the other guy gets your place. You see what I mean?
Yeah, and, it's kind of like living in a mobile home community. Sounds like people get moved around on a regular basis here.
It was an Airstream for sure. But
well, we didn't get a chance to talk about the IMF. Time goes by so quick. There was some other topics that we had wanted to get to, and time just goes by so quick. Rob, we have what, left about a minute?
Yep, we have about a minute and 10 seconds left, and that's enough time to say hello, goodbye, and give them some contact information. Rob, why don't you tell folks where they can reach you if they'd like to, and if you'd like to be reached, or whatever you got. 60 seconds, 55.
RMEadvisors.com is our website, and my mobile number is 303-472-0531, which is available most of the time for either fax or conversation, but I prefer to get a little written information first. And I'd be happy to share some of the things I'm working on, and I just want to encourage people, don't wait until you read about it in the paper that it started. Call Melanie now and get some ideas. Even if you're considering it, you're not going to buy right yet. I just think she's a great contact. I got to know her through Bob Chapman, and a lot of folks that are listeners really knew a lot about Bob and his wisdom and so forth. But I appreciate chatting with both of you.
All right,
Thank
Rob.
You, Rob.
Thank you. Look forward to talking to you again. That's Rob West. He's Senior Financial Strategist from RME Advisors. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back on Monday. Have a good weekend, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for listening. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, Frank the producer, and Rob West. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.